This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 364 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And joining me from Melbourne via Skype once again from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, the recovering Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you feeling? Right.
Well, first up, I've got to apologise for last week.
Yes.
Did you end up doing an episode last week?
No, we skipped it.
You did, yeah. So, did you put up a thing on Facebook as to why we skipped it?
Yeah. Yeah. I put up a post called "Blame It on Bruce, Not Me." Other one.
Exactly. But could I just remind everyone of this? So, can you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay, that's with the dummy in.
Right. Logo,
for 3.5 hours.
Awesome.
That's what I did last week whilst we were supposed to record podcasts, looking after a mate's baby because he had to go to Bruce Springsteen and his babysitter fell out on him the last minute.
Yeah, right.
So 3.5 hours of that.
Wow.
And he could only be on my shoulder. I couldn't put him down.
Right.
And I couldn't sit down because babies are like that. Yeah, he's like one of those babies. Yeah, and so I've got plantar fasciitis in my heels at the moment. So every step is like a knife being jabbed into your foot.
Oh,
so I had to stand for 3.5 hours. I rocked from one step to the next step to the next step.
Wow.
Because my wife happened to be out that night as well.
Yeah,
so
right.
It was all, and the poor kids just locked themselves in my bedroom, keep away from the noise.
Oh, jeez.
So can I say, I would rather listen to one of our
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, you dropped out.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, and you sound like you're a mile away from the microphone.
No, it's right next to my face.
Right.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is Adam is no longer your best friend.
What I'm saying is I would have rather listened to one of our podcasts than looked after his baby. Yeah. You know, he felt guilty when he came in the next day with a large bottle of bourbon and said, oh.
He knew he'd dumped you in it.
It was just a...
Yeah, right.
So,
you've not been feeling well yourself?
Yes, yesterday I had a rather nasty stomach upset. And unfortunately, I had a photo shoot on last night, a workshop on last night.
Yeah, which looked great.
Because the shoot was a body paint. The body paint artist had committed their time.
Yep.
The body paint model had committed their time. It was 8 hours of body painting required to get them ready.
Wow.
And I couldn't let them down, plus all the customers. I couldn't let them, so I had to go and do it. It was, 38 degrees.
Oh.
So 38 degrees is about 9,500 degrees, something like that, Fahrenheit. It was howling wind. There wasn't a cloud in the sky, which is kind of what you want on an evening shoot. And there were flies everywhere. The place stank because we've had this big downpour of rain a couple of days ago, and it washed all this crud out into the bay.
Right.
And it's now sort of festering on all our beaches. All our beaches have been closed down for health warning, not to go swimming because of all the bacteria.
Yeah.
And there's us wandering around. Everybody, including the model before the shoot, was, does anybody have any open wounds on their legs?
Oh, no.
Last thing. And so the thing is, so it was on this beach. The most pleasant place to shoot for the entire evening was in a sewer tunnel.
Right.
Because it was about 20 degrees cooler.
Yeah.
And this, God forbid, I had this lovely breeze coming down it. So it was cool, had this little bit of air movement that wasn't horrible, but biting wind with sand in it.
Yep.
And other than all the mosquitoes in there, it was fabulous.
Well, mate, well done on the images, because none of that is obvious from looking at the images.
It was a tough night. I said I almost I was dizzy. I was spinning around.
Geez. Yeah.
I was all over the place. And I almost face planted into the water twice just almost fainting.
Yeah, right.
Especially this last particular one we were doing, which was some light painting. And I had to keep sort of going into the shot, doing the light painting, and then running out of the shot before the flash. And after about 15 of them, because it was the weirdest technical issues I've ever had in a shoot.
Really?
So I've got six people lined up, all shooting exactly the same thing.
Right? Yeah.
But we're all doing a 13 or 15 second exposure, depending on what, you know, what time of the shoot went through. We went a bit longer as the shoot went on. So 13 second shoot, I'm getting the somebody holding the flash and they're firing the flash at the 11 second mark. Okay, and I'm counting the whole thing. So I'm counting them down, telling them. I had one woman whose tripod was so unstable, I had to get her to use a 2 second countdown. But time her 2 second timer, so her camera would go off at the same time as the other five people lined up.
Oh, no.
So I'm doing the 3, 2, 1 fire. Yeah. It was the countdown. But it was 3 Rosalie, which is the name, 3 Rosalie, 1 fire. So the time that the Rosalie presses the button, 2 seconds delay, so they'll all go off at the same time.
Yeah.
Then I'm doing this light painting. Then I've got to run out of the shot about – so I'm running out of the shot about the 10-second mark. I've got 1 second to get out of shot before the woman holding the flash has to fire the flash at 11. And I had to do this about – so the weird technical thing is out of the group of 6, one person had had the flash.
Yep.
The next person next to it wouldn't. The next person would have the flash. The next person wouldn't. The next person had the flash.
Right.
So – how is this possible that with all the same exposures and they're all saying, oh, no, the shutter's going off after the flash is fired, that the flashes are registering their camera. They're all in exactly the same camera settings, the same ISO, the same everything.
Yeah.
But only some of them were seeing the flash in their shots and some weren't.
Oh, what?
And, of course, when you see, and I'm just not thinking straight and I'm tired, it's the very last shot of a lot of what turned out to be a very long evening. It was supposed to go 6:30, late 30, and we got off the bay at 10:13.
Oi, oi, oi.
It took an hour to get this one last shot. And so it was a hell of a tough night. It was fun. We had a good time.
Yeah. But,
oh, my wordy lordy.
The things you do for your customers, mate.
You know, yeah, we had a ball. As I said, it was good value, but it was a struggle. And we had this beautiful sunset as far as colours go. There's a little tiny bit of cloud on the horizon, and the colours there were fabulous. If the sky had all clouds in it, it would have been one hell of a sunset, and it would have been incredible. It was just mind blowing.
Yeah,
but you know, it is what it is. What it is.
That's it. Yes. Yeah. Well, interesting times.
Yeah. So. So I've got another one next Wednesday night. So we'll see how that goes.
Because you haven't punished yourself enough.
Yeah. Oh, no. Well, the thing is, it sold out in like 20 minutes or something, this event.
Wow.
And all these people, I didn't have time to book it, I want to come. And the body paint artist said, come on, let's do another one. It was actually there. It's up to them more than me.
Yep.
And they said, let's do another one. So I'm doing another one for them. So
nice.
It'll be good. Hopefully, I won't be unwell, and it will work well.
Well, I got my camera out.
Did you?
I did.
What for? To clean it?
Yeah, pretty much. It occurred to me that, you know, I said on the last podcast 2 weeks ago that I made a commitment that this year I want to shoot more. I feel like I haven't been shooting enough, and. January slipped by without me organising any kind of a shoot with anybody. But I did think to myself, I've never really sat down and analysed what all of my lenses do, like how they behave at given distances and given apertures. So...
You are such a knob.
I know. I know, but aren't you interested in knowing how your lenses react under certain circumstances? No.
Why? Why would you be? I can see every focal length with my eyes anyway, so I don't have to worry about that. I can see the compression. I can see the viewpoints. Yeah. I know it. Not that sounds wrong, but saying I know it all. Oh, I know it all. I know it intuitively without necessarily having to have actually sat there and analyzed it. Know what I mean? So because you're a how kind of guy. You got the details.
Yes.
So your brain would say, I want to go and analyze.
Yeah.
How they. And whereas I've just built a bank of feel.
Yeah.
Over a period of time.
And that's
so
fair
enough. It's the same end result. It's just a different way of getting there.
Yeah, but what I found interesting was seeing how my various lenses at. Well, certainly in terms of the Tamron 28-75, at its different focal lengths, and certainly at different apertures across all of my lenses, how they vignette at certain apertures but not at others, which I found interesting. Like my 20 mil wide, when you look at the first two images that I shot, which were at the very closest focusing range for that lens, which was, you know, probably about 10 centimeters.
Yeah.
At 2.8, it vignettes so much, you would think that I was a stop underexposed. And it's only when you look at the very center of the image and compare it with the following shot, which is shot at f4, that you can see that at the center of the image, the exposure is identical. But at 2.8, the whole of the surround is almost a stop under.
Man.
Which I found really interesting. And it's just not something that I'd ever consciously gone to look at before. It was an interesting process to me to go and shoot all of these apertures at the minimum focusing distance, then at 50 centimeters, then at a meter, and then at 2 meters. The longer, you know, the further you were away from the subject, the less interesting the exercise became. But certainly at the minimum focusing distance for all of my lenses, I found it an interesting process.
Oh.
So anyway, I'll chuck a couple of the images up just so people can see what I'm talking about. But I'll put them in the show notes. So
you can sort of see how all the stuff in Photoshop to and possibly Lightroom, I've never looked, to counteract this vignetting and, looking at all the different lens profiles. They've done all that kind of analysis, and they know that on X lens at certain focal length, you can add this much fall off to the edges, and it automatically corrects for that.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I thought it was an interesting exercise. Something else that came up through the week, Adam posted this, and I was also aware of it because I was on their mailing list, is that the guys at Trigger Trap are shutting shop.
Really?
Yeah. They ran a Kickstarter project for, I'm not sure exactly what it was that they were trying to launch, but they didn't raise the funds that they expected to raise, and they've just found that I assume there's a little bit of saturation of the market. There are a lot of other competitors doing similar products. I mean, you've got a mate who's done something similar that's just made it obviously a very competitive field these days, and they got to a point where they said, we just can't keep this running and be financially viable, so they're pulling the pin. So
yeah, I mean, that seems to be the way of this Kickstarter stuff. There's a lot of these Kickstarters, and then they all of a sudden gone out of business. And
it's
I'm trying to think. Is if you don't have a decent enough business now to go and set up a legitimate business without requiring crowdsourcing to make the thing viable, maybe the thing's not viable. You know, if you can't go out there and actually find a genuine backers. Have a normal line of credit that would bankroll a product that's got viability in a marketplace.
Then
can you rely on a bunch of people on the internet giving you some money and hope it's going to be enough?
Well, the thing about Trigger Trap is that Kickstarter wasn't where they started. You know,
that's the problem.
They've been up and running.
Relying on though.
Yeah, they've been up and running for years. You know,
and
we interviewed Hire a couple of years ago when they announced the app for Android and iOS, and that you can just buy these dongle cables for whatever type of camera body you've got. And I've got mine, and I've got the app on every device I have, and I love it, you know.
On your smart TV?
Not on my smart TV. You smart ass. But, so it's kind of sad. But for anyone who has already bought into the Trigger Trap ecosystem with the cables and whatever, you're probably already on their mailing list, so you probably already know, but in this process of them shutting down, they've reduced the price on all of those cables. So if you want to pick up a Trigger Trap cable, hit the link that'll be in the show notes to go to their store. I've just picked up another one for newer type Sony cameras, just in case I should ever end up with one. Because they reduced it from $30 to $6. So I thought, oh, what the hell? Might as well just grab one anyway, even if I never use it. You know, who knows? If I get 2 years down the track and I still haven't used it, I might just chuck it on eBay and I might make a profit on it. Who knows? So, that link will be in the show notes for anyone that wants to check that out. But, sorry to see them go because I thought it was a great product.
You had a viable business.
Yeah.
And then you've sort of gone away from what's been obviously working for you, and got this extra, this different level of fire. And that's not to say that, that all those other competitors wouldn't have destroyed their business anyway. Yeah. I mean, the guy I knew who came up with his cable and app and everything else, he's gone out of business too.
Right.
Yeah. So it's probably as you say, you're never going to be able to beat the Chinese at this because of sheer volume and cheapness of manufacture. So if you come up with a good idea, if you can't somehow lock down all that copywriting, it's going to be pretty easy to get outdone very quickly. So
exactly.
Probably just a sign of the times.
Yeah.
The entire photo industry is in dire problems, so it's not unheard of, I guess.
Exactly. We got a few stories submitted by Steve Peters this week.
And did we?
Yes, we did. And the first
one, I'd like to say he's a lovely guy.
I can see where this is going.
So they have to say anymore, do I? Hello, Steve.
This first one is why you shouldn't obsess over lens sharpness.
Exactly.
So maybe this throws back to my little experiment.
This article's for you, Bruce.
And I thought it was, it made perfect sense. This was on lightstalking.com, and the author of this article, Jason Little, is basically saying, you know, everything is subjective, you know, and
including this article and his opinion saying that everything's subjective.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think the point is that, you know, people get a little bit too wrapped up in, oh, what DxO mark did it get? It's like, well, who cares? Unless you've got the lens that, you know, DxO mark hold up as the benchmark for that focal length, what does it matter?
Yeah.
Right? Because, yeah, anyway, I thought it was a good article, Steve. Thank you. I thought it made perfect sense.
Well, it would do to you. I'm just busy looking at the pretty pictures.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so there's a lovely picture of these lovely old Olympus lenses from way back. And because I used to own most of these, and it's like looking, fond memories sort of thing, you know. they got the 55mm f2 there, which was just a stonking lens. It was just...
Right.
Oh, it was just a stunning lens to use.
Yeah, right.
The olden days when things were simpler, and so was I.
The next one was internet addiction is killing your photography. This was on
Patrick's. I have no idea what this is about, but I agree completely already.
Yeah, well, essentially it's saying, you know, how often do we wake up and the first thing we do is we reach for the phone to check Facebook rather than think about what should I go out and shoot today?
Oh, okay. It's not, I don't agree then.
Well, what's your take on it then?
Well, my take is that as far as the internet is killing photography is that you're looking at all this stuff that other people are doing and it's destroying your own soul because I can never produce a photograph like that.
Well, that's pretty much where this article goes.
Is it?
Yeah.
What? No, it's nuts about leaning out and getting your phone, going on Facebook rather than getting up and taking a photo of the sunrise.
But it does in the text go into, you know, that idea of just being consumed by this constant stream of stuff that ranges from absolute crap to absolute awesomeness.
Yeah.
And that you can get a little overwhelmed by it all. And as a consequence, you end up not picking up your camera at all.
I think the biggest problem is these days we see more phenomenal images than we've ever seen before. I mean, everyone seems to be taking just stupidly good images.
But I would argue that we're also seeing way more shitty pictures than we've ever seen before.
Yeah, but we tend not to look at them too much. Shitty pictures don't destroy your soul as a photographer.
No, they don't.
Because you go, well, I can do that. I got that nailed. A classic example is landscape photography.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially things like with the Milky Way shots.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've never seen photographs like that in the history of photography, this whole new post-processing to make the Milky Way look 500 times brighter than it actually was on the night.
Yep.
You know, and your foreground, you know, it had detail that you'd never normally ever seen before. And every Tom, Dick and Larry's doing it, but your photos don't look like that.
Yeah.
Mine don't look like that.
And all the Rod Thomases of the world with their trips to Iceland and these amazing shots of the Northern Lights. That stuff, we've never been inundated like we are today with images of that quality and that sort of subject matter.
The problem is even if you get to go to those places, unless you know all their post-processing techniques,
for sure,
your photos aren't going to look that good anyway. So you're going to be, I'm a crap photographer because I was at the same place they were and my photos look,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a struggle, you know. Be happy with your own work, you know. Don't have to achieve. Your photos don't have to look like everyone else's photos. You know?
No, I think it's good to at least aspire to be better.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But within reasons. I mean, if you want to spend 5 hours post-processing an image,
yeah,
you know, and if that floats your boat, all power to you. Not saying there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
But what we don't want doing is people spend 5 hours post-processing a Milky Way photograph and then going, yeah, that's what it was like.
Yeah.
No, that's how I saw it on the night, because bullshit you did, you know? so that's the thing. And people see these photos. And it's not so much for the more seasoned amateur photographer who's sort of seen that transition. It's all these new people are coming into the world of photography, and they're seeing these photographs and going, oh, I could, you know, it's going to put them off completely because I could never do a photograph like that.
And that's exactly what this article's saying.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're the type of person that loves the idea of going out and shooting but doesn't like the idea of spending 5 hours in post afterwards,
yeah,
then this is a real buzzkill, isn't it?
Yep, totally.
Yeah. Anyway, next story that Steve sent us was from nationalgeographic.com, and this was 10 travel cameras or 10 compact cameras for people who are traveling.
My trouble and strife, yeah, the wife, is looking in 2018 of doing Everest Base Camp.
Wow.
Which is a massive concern to me.
Why?
Because she wants me to make sure I teach her photography well enough before she goes, if she's going to do this, she wants to take great photos. Yeah, it's like trying to teach someone, you know, like a family member to drive a car. You shouldn't do it.
No.
Yeah. Pay a professional. Now I'm a professional, but don't pay me to teach my business. But this is the thing. So she's going to want a good little travel camera, so we'll see what they're recommending. And if you know anyone who can recommend she can learn from, let me know.
All jokes aside, maybe you should put her in touch with Rakesh, because he's at least been to Everest Base Camp.
There you go.
So he can talk to her about photography as well as going to Everest Base Camp.
It's going to help me. I'm talking to a bloke she doesn't know in a different state on the phone.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Yeah, it's
like a treat. So these top 10 compact traps, what was their criteria? Do we know?
I haven't actually read the article. I was just about to flick through the 10 cameras in question, and presumably they sort of look at the pros and the cons of each camera.
These cameras are perfect for both traveling light and making incredible photos. Well, I disagree. I mean, look, they've got like a basic Olympus point and shoot camera here.
Right.
Yeah, Olympus Tough.
Yep.
Well, you're not going to be able to create great photos with that and make it. You're not going to be able to make incredible photos because you have no control over the camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, you're going to be limited by what nature gives you. And as we've just been discussing, yeah, it doesn't matter how good it is. It's not going to look anything like the photos you might have seen of your trip to other people's trips to base camp who lugged the gear in, you know?
Right. Are you saying that the TG4 doesn't have manual modes?
The Olympus TG4?
That's the Tough.
Yeah. Even if it does, it's got like two apertures.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, you can have 5.6 or F8. And on a sensor that small, you're not going to see a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So as far as minimal depth, I mean, I have this problem. People come to my How to Use Your Camera workshop all the time with these all-in-one cameras with manual control.
Yeah.
And they have so many limitations, and the size of the sensor is so small that, you know, okay, you might be able to play a little bit with shutter speeds, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even then, very limited range of those.
Yeah. Yeah, those small sensors are great if you're doing landscape stuff because you can get such massive
depth of field. Yeah, great depth, but yeah, as soon as you want to blur out a background or you want to use a decent length shutter speed for some you know, movement or something knock down ambient light, if you can only go to F8 at 100 ISO, well, you're going to be
your options limited. Are limited.
Yeah, I mean, on a bright sunny day, you're going to be shooting at a 60th.
Yeah.
or faster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last one from Steve was a little bit of humour from the guys at fstoppers.com, and it's photographer takes picture of Golden Gate Bridge starts business. And this was absolutely hilarious. I'd just like to keep it simple, you know, saturation 100, clarity minus 100, print. and then some client feedback. I just asked for some nice engagement shots. I'm not sure why there was a tiger photoshopped into all of them. I mean, do we even have tigers in California?
Yeah, the zoo.
It's a hilarious read, so definitely worth 5 minutes of your time. So thank you for that one, Steve. It was good. I enjoyed it. Tony White sent us a story which I'm fairly certain we covered probably a year ago now, and it was all about, would you ask a plumber to work for free in exchange for exposure?
Yeah.
And I think we've seen a plethora of blog posts along this line over the last few years about, you know, continually asking photographers to work, you know, for the exposure, quote unquote. So thank you for that.
I got flamed a little bit on a model site before. I did a studio workshop last week.
Right.
Saturday. First one in like a year and a half. But I was putting a call out for a model. Now, I never use makeup artists. But I know a lot of makeup artists are on this particular Facebook page for, it's because it's a model and makeup artist.
Yep.
So I said, look, I need a model, blah, 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 this length of time. This is the pay sort of thing, reliability and must. Now, and then I put, I don't use makeup artists, but if there is someone out there who wants to volunteer to come along just for themselves, to do something for themselves, feel free to drop me a line and we'll take it under consideration, kind of thing. And I got flamed. The makeup artist should be paid the same amount as the photographer and the same amount of money should be paid, not the same amount, but paid like the photographer, paid like the model, blah, blah, blah. I'm going, hang on a sec. I said, if they want to volunteer, I don't really want it here and makeup artists there because they make a bit of a pain in the bum, actually. They slow everything down.
Yes.
But, you know, if there's someone there who wants to come along, yeah, maybe they can, yeah?
Yeah.
So there's different situations like that, you know. I reckon that there's a time and place for free. There's a time and place for working under other arrangements rather than necessarily being paid.
Yeah. Yep.
But, of course, obviously there's also a genuine time where people should be paid, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of making that judgment yourself and not letting other people tell you what is right or wrong.
Yeah.
So – and I say this all the time about, they've only got a $500 budget for their wedding. This is disgraceful, but they're killing wedding. Well, maybe, you know, not everyone wants to spend, thousands of dollars on wedding photos.
Yeah.
Maybe if not everyone's expectation is these over-the-top posed, lit, bloody wedding melodramatic shots. You look at wedding photography from 30 years ago, and there's none of this over-the-top crap we do these days.
No.
It was just... Yep, it was recording the event and a couple of nice poses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we're going, massive location shoots. We're doing, you know, ridiculous light. It's getting to the point where it's not really about the wedding anymore, is it?
No. It's a glorified photo shoot.
Yeah, it's now about, come and look at me, look how fabulous I looked.
Yeah.
You know?
And I heard somewhere just in the last couple of weeks, I don't know if it was you that mentioned it, but the new thing now is all about the bride having a second dress for the reception. And that this is the new thing. Like, you're already spending enough on the day.
Oh, yeah. So some smart marketer came up with that idea,
yeah,
didn't they?
Exactly.
Here's an idea. And then let's make them buy another one for the trash of the dress.
Yeah.
Yeah, God. So you can sell three wedding dresses to every wedding. It's fabulous.
Yeah, it's great.
Good money in that.
Great for the fashion industry.
Or maybe buy two, get one half price.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Adam sent us a couple of stories this week. One was the trigger trap thing, which we've already covered. The next one was, there's a $1,300 monitor that Apple is selling. It's made by LG. It's a 5K monitor. So, you know, resolution out the wazoo. The only problem is you can't use it within 6 feet of a Wi-Fi router.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Apparently having it too close to a Wi-Fi router does something that interferes with the ability of the graphics card to illuminate all of the pixels on the screen properly, and so you get this weird-ass sort of flickering thing happening.
How strange is that?
Yeah. So apparently they know about it. They're on the case, and, you know, maybe there'll be a firmware, you know, push to the monitor that can change the way it works or something. But yeah.
The good news is,
yeah,
the 21.5-inch 4K display doesn't have the same problem. Wow.
That kind of surprises me in this day and age that a product like that would have got to market without the manufacturer having realized that was going to be an issue.
Yeah, maybe they already did and just wanted to get it out regardless.
Maybe. Maybe.
Who knows?
And the third one from Adam was, find out why HDR is becoming a must-have TV technology.
Yeah, that's right. It's become very popular in TVs.
Is it?
Advertising, you pick up any TV catalogue these days and they're all about HDR, HDR, HDR.
Yeah, but I've never activated that on my Sony. I'm sure there's a feature for it, but I would never activate it.
We're talking about HDR video footage, dude.
As opposed to...
Non-HDR video footage.
Right, okay.
Idiots, what do you mean? No, as in the footage is using high dynamic range.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the TV is therefore producing that tonal. So the problem is, it's all about tonal range, as you can imagine. So with normal TVs not being able to, for these 4K and 8K TVs showing so much detail, you're starting to see a lot more flaws and a lot more lack of detail in areas. So now they start doing this HDR footage, so you get all this massive dynamic range being displayed at 4K or 8K on your screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it makes everything so hyper-real, it's like you can step into the TV.
Right.
Into the world, yeah.
Okay.
So, it gives you, it's supposed to give you a much greater gradation between tones and colours.
So. Right, so this is not just a playback setting, it's all about the input.
Yeah, but it's all about you know, footage being broadcast eventually by whoever.
Okay.
With all this amazing, ridiculous, over the top detail. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
We shall live and learn.
Not necessarily.
And the last thing was a comment from David Kembry. On the wall of the Shutter Sync page on Facebook, he said, "Just a comment about the latest Pentax. Doesn't need to look good. It's not a fashion accessory. It's a tool." Just needs to take photos.
Rubbish. Yeah, but, okay, yeah, to some degree that's true, but you don't want to be walking around with the world's ugliest camera.
No.
You know, everyone pointing and snickering as you walk, oh, look, you couldn't afford a nice pretty camera, he's only got that one.
Do you remember what Pentax camera it was?
It was their latest one, their newest, latest model, whatever it is. But here's the thing, though. What I often find, but when I say this, is often these ugly cameras are not necessarily very ergonomically sound.
Right.
And the way they and Sony's been known for this over the years, coming out, especially with the early days of digital, with these really weird-shaped compact cameras they come out with. You know, it's all lens and a little flexible moving body and all sorts of stuff. And they just weren't practical to use because, yeah, the concept's kind of okay, I get to understand it, but the reality of the using was just so unwieldy. And this whole thing just, I don't know, it's just an ugly camera.
Are you thinking the K1 or the KP?
I don't know, the latest one.
Okay, because I've just gone to Rico's website and the first one that comes up is the KP, and then the slideshow moves on to the K1. I don't know, neither of them strike me as being overly ugly or anything different.
Could have just been the angle of the shot that
I saw. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, it looked like his prism was exceptionally unattractive.
Right, fair enough.
And you know, it's the head is just not, you know, not attractive at all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a butterface.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice.
A butterface camera.
Excellent. All right, mate.
I've got one other little thing. I've got a call this week from the US.
Right.
Asking if I'd be interested in leading a photo or running a photo experience for this secretive group of high-end photo retailers out of the US and Canada. So this group has been going since like the 1920s. And yeah,
I think you mentioned
this mob before. So they've got some money to spend. They want to run a photo experience.
Right.
And they've got like 4 days. I'm going, oh, God. Yeah. Let's go to India. Let's go. Let's change it all. So at this stage, I threw an idea at them. How about we go to a luxury lodge in Alaska or Canada and photograph the bears eating the migrating salmon?
Nice.
And they're all for it. So it looks like next year I might have the opportunity to go up and do that, which would be a bit of fun.
Wow. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, so it's my biggest problem. So I spent a couple of days this week trying to do some research into it. The biggest problem is all these, and they want luxury lodge. These people have got a fair bit of money. They don't want to sleep in, you know, your normal motel type stuff.
Yeah.
Is the lodges aren't very big.
Right.
Yeah, they might have 6 rooms or 9 rooms sort of stuff. And if you've got 40 people to try and accommodate, it's so if anyone out there knows an awesome
lodge in Canada or Alaska that holds a reasonable amount of people and is of a certain standard, you know, posh.
Yep.
Give me a holler.
Okay.
And last but not least, this week, Tamron announced two new lenses.
Oh, yes, their new 70 to 200.
I'm going to tell you, that looks like sex on a stick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was meeting up with the new Tamron distributors in Australia yesterday because I got my 15 to 30 replaced before last night's shoot.
Oh, nice.
And so I met up with them for the first time and I was just talking about, I was showing them my 15 to 30 and I reckon what's gone wrong with the 15 to 30 is it's got powder in it from Holy last year.
Right.
And I was showing them, I can show because inside the cap it's still got powder in it and around the outside of the barrel of the lens it's still got some powder stuff. So I've got a feeling that. So the new 70 to 200 is weatherproof.
Nice.
So that sort of hoping that the seals will therefore prevent a bit of that sort of stuff going on.
Yeah, right.
And another thing is stuff like Namibia, which is an incredibly sandy location.
Yep.
You tend to get a lot of sand inside your lenses that aren't weather sealed.
Yep.
So yeah, this could be just a beautiful new addition. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing that.
Nice.
And it's supposed to be optically the best 70 to 200 ever made.
Wow.
So we shall see.
Well, if that turns out to be the case, and given the price point,
$12.99
US, they're going to ship them by the bucket load.
That's kind of the goal, I'd imagine. It's the same construction as their new 45s and 85s and 90 mils. So the construction is fabulous.
Yeah,
The build quality is excellent. I mean, the lens quality of these new lenses are just exceptionally good.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a stonking little lens, I reckon. And that's just released for anyone with the crop sensor camera, the APS-C size crop sensor, their new 10 to 24 in the same construction and the same increased optical performance and everything else. So
nice.
That's going to be something to see as well.
Nice.
Coming to a store near you end of February, apparently. So.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Ah, excellent. All right, mate. Well, good to catch up.
It's lovely talking to you during the day for once rather than nighttime.
Exactly.
Because the problem with nighttime ones is I'm not much of a sleeper. I don't like to get to bed till like 1 o'clock in the morning or so.
Yeah.
You know, we record 9 till 10 sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is now it's 10:41 in the morning. I can have a nap now.
Nice.
So I'm going to put my head down, have a little bit of a nap.
Well, as I suggested in the blog post I put up last week, that this week's episode was only going to happen if I didn't end up with a ticket for Springsteen tonight. As it happens, I did end up with a ticket, but I'm having a day off work today, so we were able to record through the daytime. So,
it's work.
So it's a win all round.
Except the people have to listen to us. But
yes, that's right.
That's
all right, mate. Will you have a good week?
I will, and you too.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Wonderful. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. So before we sign off, let's hear from David Marland with a photography book that's not about the photos. Take it away, David.
Thanks, Bruce. As I wandered through the bookshop and naturally gravitated to the photography section, I came upon A History of Photography in 50 Cameras. It looked a bit different, I thought. As the price of this little hardback was on special at $14.95, I thought, well, it's worth the risk, and I'm glad I did. After having read quite a few books on the history of photography, and mainly representing the photographs, this is quite a little gem because it looks at things in a different way. Michael Pritchard has selected 50 cameras ranging from the earliest available daguerreotypes to mobile phones, and he provides a history of photography using the camera as the theme. Each camera is selected because it's made some technical advancement or it's made some impact. There's a bit of a context of the times, examples of the photographs, something about a photographer who used this type of camera or maybe the designer. There are stories about some of the personalities and spin-off cameras that are related to the feature one. The writing style is really approachable. And what interested me is that the basic principles have not really changed from 1838. And most of the key innovations in functional camera designs were established by about 1890. I was fascinated by the sophistication of some of the early cameras. I mean, focus was originally achieved by a box-within-box design with a front box containing the lens moving backwards and forwards. We then evolved to the bellows, which came in about 1853, and those bellows moved backwards and forwards. And it really wasn't until later that the focus occurred on the lens with a fixed distance between the back plate and the lens. So things like that, that's the steady innovation. Some cameras have very interesting names. The Talbot Mousetrap was built by Fox Talbot for his early experiments in the 1830s. There was the Giraud daguerreotype of 1839, which is really the forerunner of most commercial cameras. And very quickly, there was an imitation and there were rivals. The Suss was one. And interestingly, both of these cameras were licensed by Daguerre and both used the same lens manufacturer. So there was, in 1853, there was the Otwell double folding camera, which collapsed down to almost like a flat board. All the cameras at that stage were made of wood. There was Powell's stereoscopic camera in 1858. And that heralded the great Victorian parlour entertainment of stereoscopic viewing. And in 1859 came the Sutton panoramic camera. Now, this featured a water-filled lens with a 120-degree field of view because through water it was clearer. The glass plates were actually specially curved. And unfortunately, very few of those plates survive. But the degree of sophistication for me was a real eye-opener. And this was all before 1860. So by the time photography was 21, all those principles we know have been established. And after that, when you think about it, it's really a matter of refinement as manufacturing methods improved. Even interchangeable lenses and interchangeable backs were available by the 1890s. And there were cameras like the Stern concealed vest camera of 1888, which heralded secret and street photography. There was the Ticker of 1904, which was designed to look like a pocket watch, and it sold in its thousands. What's interesting is the relative price of these cameras. And when they're translated into modern dollars, the plate cameras for professionals or extremely well-to-do amateurs seem to have consistently been in the equivalent of $4,000 to $6,000. Does that sound familiar? Meanwhile, the point-and-shoots seem to have been at about the $200 to $300 range. Also sounding familiar. And like computers, the relative prices have stayed relatively the same. But what's packed into cameras today, particularly, is quite amazing. I think I got a lot more out of this book because I've already read a fair bit on the history of photography through the photographs. So it's a lovely compliment and a reminder that beautiful images can be made with very simple equipment. A History of Photography in 50 Cameras by Michael Pritchard. It's published by New Burlington Books and the hardcover's listed at Booktopia for about $12.50. I found mine in Dimmicks for $14.95. Cheers.
Excellent, David. Thank you for that. All right, that shall do it for this week. And until I speak with you next week, take care.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
Another audio2.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.